I'm Alex Marlowe, editor-in-chief of Breitbart News and author of the hottest Christmas gift of the Christmas season, Breaking the News, my New York Times bestselling book. And this is the Breitbart News Daily Podcast. Big show today. We will have two guests today. Rand Paul will be here, senator from Kentucky, where I will break down the truth about the coronavirus, what we know about the various treatments and vaccines, and his ongoing feud, which he is roundly winning against Dr. Fauci. And we'll also speak to Sean Spicer, former White House press secretary and Newsmax host and author, who is always enjoyable to converse with. But first, we break down the news, and we start with Andrew Cuomo and Chris Cuomo and Fredo being at least temporarily ousted from CNN. And I'm not sure who they should replace him with. I mean, I guess the obvious choice is Dr. Fauci, right? I mean, he's on the network more than anyone else who doesn't have their own show. But who else could it be? Jen Psaki, she could do it. She was a CNN contributor. And Jim Acosta, Brian Stelter, I mean, a couple of the weekend hosts, maybe they're due for a big promotion. But I'll tell you my sleeper pick, Andrew Cuomo, out of work right now. He'd be a perfect person to fill that slot that Chris Cuomo is vacating. Those of you who did not listen to yesterday's show, Fredo was busted, or at least has apparently been busted, using CNN resources to investigate his brother's sexual assault accusers, which apparently is crossing the line. And I give you all the details on that in the monologue portion, plus a preview of a historic abortion case that will be argued in front of the Supreme Court today. And more on the new Twitter boss who is already enacting new censorship measures that should hurt conservative journalists. I give you all the details on that, plus a Breitbart exclusive with Nancy Pelosi going maskless at a crowded indoor event in D.C. and is spotted in a photo conversing with a child who is wearing a mask. Unbelievable, even for a big hypocrite like the current Speaker of the House. The Fed has admitted that inflation is permanent and Kamala Harris didn't pass the bar exam, plus much, much more in the news portion before we get into our interviews. But first, I do want to talk to you about AMAC. AMAC is an incredible sponsor that is a conservative advocacy group and benefits organization that has more than 2 million members and counting. It's basically the conservative alternative to the AARP. And if you're on the left, I get it. Maybe the AARP is for you. But if you're on the right, you should be with AMAC. That's where it's at, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC has become one of the most significant conservative organizations in America. Joining AMAC gives you access to money-saving benefits, cutting-edge news, and a magazine full of insightful takes on today's most important issues. But most importantly, AMAC is working tirelessly to preserve the freedom secured by our Constitution. With a full-time presence on Capitol Hill, AMAC is pushing back against the efforts to defund our police, weaken our borders, and replace your freedom with government controls. Stand with me and over 2 million patriots by joining right now at amac.us/Breitbart. That's amac.us/Breitbart. The benefits are great, but the cause is greater. Join today. That's amac.us/Breitbart. Exciting news day. A lot of interesting stuff broke yesterday and some more to come today. CNN has suspended Chris Cuomo, a.k.a. Fredo, indefinitely after learning of greater levels of involvement in Andrew Cuomo's defense. It's hard not to mock this because Fredo Cuomo was he was such a terrible broadcaster and such a partisan. He said so many horrible things, routinely defending Antifa, misinterpreting the First Amendment, being an all-around not-so-bright guy. And then it became clear that he was working on his brother's behalf when he was in the process of getting ousted. He was advising his brother when he was in the process of getting ousted for his Me Too issues. Andrew Cuomo, of course, is his older brother, who is, I think the media calls him a sex pest, because the accusations against him, they weren't exactly Weinstein-esque, but it was inappropriate and potentially criminal, by the way. And not to mention that Fredo Cuomo mocked the coronavirus, even though Andrew was presiding over the greatest mass death decision of the entire pandemic, which was cramming sick coronavirus patients into nursing homes with vulnerable elderly people who otherwise would have survived the virus. Well, Chris was ignoring that and making fun of the virus with giant cotton swab prop comedy. So he was, he's always been kind of a joke, and his ratings are garbage, but relative to CNN, his ratings are not terrible. But he is been a subject of ridicule on the right, being likened to the dumb brother in the Godfather movies who ended up in a media job. But he is seemed untouchable at CNN. They just seemed like they would just stick with him forever. And, you know, they passed him. They passed over Golden Boy Jake Tapper to give him that 9 p.m. slot. And they stuck with him through a lot of these scandals. Like, you might remember the scandal where he freaked out and said the word Fredo was like the N-word. It is not, I'll tell you that. And he misinterpreted the Constitution. It was saying that the Constitution did not say you have to be peaceful when you're exercising your First Amendment rights. That is, of course, false. He got caught doing a mask hypocrisy after preaching masks very early on in the pandemic. I mean, the list of times where this guy has clowned himself. His hoax quarantine. How could I forget that? The hoax quarantine. I did not forget it. I forgot it for 1 minute. The hoax quarantine, where he was quarantining when he had the coronavirus. He was spotted outside of his house because he was building a new house in the Hamptons over the weekend during his quarantine, where he was doing a show from his basement. And he got into a fight with a fat tire biker and then went on a bizarre rant on the SiriusXM show about it. And then on CNN, never acknowledged it. He never acknowledged that he had broken out of his quarantine. And then they had this dramatic scene of him emerging from his basement after 2 weeks as if he was some sort of a hero. Anyway, he's finally out, it seems like, or at least he's suspended indefinitely, which seems like, you know, step one of a two-part conversation that ends with him being fired. Because he was using CNN resources, if you want to know where he finally crossed the line, using CNN resources to investigate the women who were accusing Andrew Cuomo of harassment. And this is an era where we were supposed to believe all women, and Chris Cuomo is kind of a caricature of a masculine guy, you know, meathead. Seems to spend a lot of time in the gym, maybe an excessive amount of time in the gym. Maybe should spend more time working on himself in a mental capacity. That's just my two cents. I'm not a doctor, but, you know, you guys know that. But using the CNN resources to investigate the women who were accusing his brother, seems like credibly accusing his brother of bad behavior, appears to be the third rail, so to speak. The line has been crossed, and now he's on the bench, and it seemed like CNN was inclined to stick with him for a day or two. So maybe there's going to be more that we're going to learn, because he did come out and do his show the last couple of days, and as if nothing was going on, as if this investigation into Andrew Cuomo wasn't heating up and there wasn't revelations that made him look bad. But I'll tell you, there was a bit more of an eye roll by the Breitbart audience at this than I anticipated. And I kind of dig that. I kind of dig you guys. You guys are good bellwethers. You guys were excited, but you weren't overly excited. So I'm interested in that. And by the way, even Rolling Stone and The Atlantic was wondering why he hadn't been fired before CNN made their move, which I love that, because Rolling Stone, you know, is famous for the University of Virginia rape hoax. So they're the absolute worst on the Me Too stuff, because they undermine the whole movement, because they have this huge article that had to be retracted. It, one of the greatest humiliations in modern journalism, that accused a fraternity, and I believe it was the University of Virginia, of a brutal gang rape of a girl that was totally false and was debunked in fairly short order and had to be completely retracted. Huge embarrassment there. And even they're saying, I don't know, guys, I don't know if he's going to get away with this one. And The Atlantic, which is, of course, Lorene Powell Jobs' prestige publication that is basically a mouthpiece for the establishment Democrat thinking at this time and the donor class thinking. And so that they gave him the gigantic old-timey hook to pull him off the stage. So that, I do think, makes Jeff Zucker, the CNN boss, look less decisive here and erodes the credibility of the fake news network even more. I've been thinking a little bit more about the media because, you know, we're still watching this Build Back Better bill play out in Congress, past the House and heading towards the Senate, where I don't know if it will pass or not. It's hard to know at this point because it'll be such a slim vote to try to get all the Democrats on board, and I don't think any Republicans would support this. You always have to keep an eye on Murkowski in particular, but I don't think any other Republicans would, though I could eat those words. You never know. But it's got so many handouts. They're literally for journalists. It actually has carve-outs so that journalists will be able to make money and retain money. And that is something that is clearly corruption, trying to make sure that the package gets more favorable coverage because the news organizations do stand to benefit from its package. So PRASH, was supposed to be watchdogs, is getting a bribe, essentially, in the Build Back Better bill. Makes you think if we're running our country in a way that is really serious about long-term survival. Exclusive photos, Breitbart News right now, Nancy Pelosi going maskless at a crowded D.C. event, and the photo we have will actually probably make you upset, because if you go to the lead story right now at Breitbart, she's not just maskless, she's maskless talking to a child. And this is something that has been incredibly exasperating for me now as a parent of young children, that it's not just that these people are hypocrites. It's not that they're just forcing us to wear the mask, even though it's clear the masks have not worked the entire pandemic. But they really want us to go out of our way to mask our kids, even though the kids are healthy kids are at almost no risk for the virus. Note the word almost, source-funded freaks. The kids are at almost no risk of the virus. And the masks don't seem to be working for any of us anyway. So that you see Joe Biden flaunting the mask rules. You see Nancy Pelosi flaunting the mask rules. Also yesterday, not exclusive photos, Jill Biden gleefully reading Christmas stories at the White House without a mask on while the children sit there wearing masks. A level of insanity that you would think that a doctor like Jill Biden would be able to figure out that this is inappropriate. I mean, someone who was nominated by Whoopi Goldberg to be the Surgeon General of the United States, having children sit there masked, and she does not wear a mask. There are also some adults in the room who are masked. She's the only one who wasn't. Why is that? I don't understand why she would not have a mask on there. Because everyone else in the room was. But with exclusive with Pelosi, you can see her talking to children at this DC event, very crowded, no mask on. Literally everyone else in the room has got them on. Just a couple of hours earlier, literally late yesterday afternoon, early yesterday evening, Nancy Pelosi had a staffer on Twitter pushing for masks, mask shaming people. A person named Robin Patterson mocked Republicans, saying that now that Omicron has emerged, I wonder if any Republican Hill staffers regret embracing anti-mask sentiment as a personal trait. That is not science, by the way. That is not a scientific argument. And there's no data in there to suggest the masks, which have not worked, are working. That is a passive-aggressive snark. And Robin Patterson's boss, the Speaker of the House, the D.C. event with mask kids when she flaunts her own rules. I was on Dennis Prager's show yesterday, for any of you who care about such things. And he asked me about whether or not he thinks it's a realistic possibility for America to separate and have some secession, stuff like that. And I always cite the masks. I always cite that they haven't worked. They haven't worked since the beginning. They were never going to work unless, of course, we all adopted N95s, which would have caused different health problems for a lot of people. But we didn't. And we still keep wearing them. And so many of you guys won't rebel against it. Me included sometimes. I rebel a lot. The vast majority of places I go in my heavily masked area, I do not wear them. And I did again last night, and I will do it again today, and that will continue. But, you know, we don't even not wear the masks that are totally anti-science and is literally representative, a symbol of our personal oppression from the U.S. government in an anti-science way, and we just get pushed around. So I say this to a lot of you guys who are preparing for the coming civil war or the coming secession, that we need to prove to ourselves, first of all, that we would be willing to do the work, if that ever became necessary, to economically uncouple. It strikes me as impossible, but can you imagine what work that would be? If you think about it, the secession would basically be, you'd have to see the coast and maybe a couple of big cities would somehow be one country, and then you'd have the middle of America be another country. How are we going to do that? We can't even flaunt these stupid mask rules. It don't work. You know, again, the lowest coronavirus cases right now are in Florida. A place is not in mask for a year. But keep masking up your kids. I'm not doing it. My kids don't have any. I mean, they're young, but my three-year-old doesn't. He doesn't have one. And we won't be going to any preschools that require them. Marco Rubio flagged something interesting yesterday, which is that he's saying that the New York Times was aware that Xi Jinping had a role in the Uyghur genocide dating all the way back to 2019, that they had a 403 pages of leaked documents that were sent to them, and they've just been sitting on it. They're not doing anything with it. And if they have reported on it, they've certainly Ben Smithed it, which is an expression that is in honor of the New York Times opinion columnist Ben Smith, where you might report something, but you report it in a way that intentionally downplays the significance of the story because it politically does not benefit you. I don't think any of you can be surprised by this, but Rubio has got a long letter to Sulzberger, who runs the New York Times, about why they're not focused on this. This is one of the great crises of our time in the world. China, the most populous nation in the world, that is probably the second most powerful economically, and they have literal concentration camps and mass discrimination, human rights abuses, but because the world is hooked on their cheap products, that no one stands up to them. One of the disgraceful things of our time, and something that we will look back on, we will not be proud of the way we acted towards China during this time. You can guarantee it. Unless, of course, China, you know, usurps us all, and we become part of the one China policy. But this should not surprise anyone who read my book, Breaking the News. I have a whole chapter in the New York Times where the extent to which they're willing to promote or demote stories and frame stories based on a political narrative that benefits the establishment, Democrats and globalists, is there is very few. There's very few things they're not willing to do. And this is certainly it. So remember, they had advertorials where they would actually publish Chinese propaganda within their pages. And I break it all down. If you want additional reading, Mark Levin's on Freedom of the Press. His best chapter, I think, in that book is the chapter in the New York Times, which is a pretty much a clear evisceration. And then I think there's even more fresher material in Breaking the News, my book. Big day today at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will hear the biggest challenge to Roe v. Wade in decades. This is a case called Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organizations. It brings into question, according to our reporting on Breitbart News, the constitutionality of Mississippi's Gestational Age Act, which would make abortions performed after 15 weeks of pregnancy unlawful. The court announced in May it will decide whether all pre-viability prohibitions on elective abortions are unconstitutional in the United States. And this is something that the court has reportedly wrestled with, whether or not they would take this case, for over a year. And the lawyers from the Mississippi's Attorney General office said that the introduction to the petition, that because of the conflict between the case and Roe versus Wade, according to Catherine Hamilton of Breitbart, good reasons exist for the court to reevaluate its jurisprudence in this regard. So a lot of high profile figures have been weighing in, from Mike Pence. We have some exclusive commentary on that. And lots of people like Susan B. Anthony List, President Marjorie Dannenfelser, others are weighing in. A lot of anticipation for this because this could be big. You know, it's hard to picture the Supreme Court the way it currently is, taking a bold stand against Roe v. Wade, or at least dismantling parts of it. But you never know, because there are a lot of committed Catholics there. So who's to say? We will have a lot more for that probably tomorrow. I think that's part of the plan for tomorrow's show, is that we'll get thoughts on that. But a lot of previews today at Breitbart.com. One thing that has been floated is a way to get Kamala Harris off of the ticket, who has been uniquely bad vice president for a administration, the Biden administration, the Let's Go Brandon administration, to do so horribly. Kamala Harris has distinguished herself as totally worthless. And she's been tasked with the border situation, which only gets worse day to day, which I think she probably knew going in, her getting that task was not going to help her resume and help her chances of being president. It has now been floated that maybe she'll get removed from the ticket for 2024, even if Joe runs again, which who's to say Joe will. But one of the things that is being floated as a way to get her off the ticket is to nominate her for the Supreme Court, which I think would be epic because she's just not particularly bright. And there's lots of people on the Supreme Court who, typically speaking, whether or not you agree or disagree with their politics, not a lot of dumb people get nominated to the Supreme Court. I've seen no evidence Kamala Harris is particularly high intellect. I mean, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Elena Kagan. I mean, there's people out there who are on the left who you can tell are really smart people. You don't get that impression from Kamala at all. And here's the evidence. She'd be the first person on the Supreme Court that would have failed the bar exam. That is interesting. I think that this would also open up the Supreme Court to the potential of seeing someone like a Antonio Villaraigosa, former mayor of L.A., become on the Supreme Court, because Villaraigosa failed the bar exam four times and never passed it. So maybe he could end up on the Supreme Court, because he couldn't be governor because the timing coincided with Gavin Newsom. He didn't get his day in the sun. So I think you get Villaraigosa on there. Oh, and he never passed it. So it's just, why not? Just add him to it. Add him to the court. All right. So let's check in on the first day of what some of the internet are calling Gulag Parag. Parag Agrawal, the new Twitter CEO, who is an immigrant to this country and is now in charge of the First Amendment for huge corners of our debate in the social media sphere. And his first day, Twitter has banned some sharing of photos and videos without consent. So that means this is a effort to go after Project Veritas and others who are inclined to post things that are unflattering to individuals. This is trying to take away a major journalistic tool that conservatives use, which is literally pointing out truthful things. This also is running in the other direction from what we've talked about so often, which is Twitter's most egregious act of, I would say most blatant, not egregious, most blatant act of political censorship, which is censoring the Hunter Biden scoops from the New York Post, and the reporter behind those scoops, Emma Jo Morris, now works for me at Breitbart. But those stories, which were entirely buttoned up, perfectly reported, that those were banned as Russian disinformation. Those were not Russian, nor were they disinformation. And Twitter banned it, and then they said it was because it was a hack. We don't know if it was a hack at all. In fact, it appears it was not a hack. So, but this is about trying to shut down Project Veritas, shut down whistleblower video, and this is an excuse for more censorship. So that's his first day, as I said yesterday in the show, when there's a regime change in Silicon Valley. Typically, instead of things getting better, they tend to get worse because they're under more pressure because the left is never satisfied. So just know, as left-wing as Jack Dorsey was, he was under pressure from his rank and file at his company to be even more censorious than he already was. And Agrawal gets in and he throws the wokesters in his company a bone, and he throws the First Amendment under the bus some more. So not a good sign, and we will track all that, and maybe, hopefully, it'll start pushing more people off the platform, because Twitter is such a cesspool, and Breitbart is very good on it, but just know that they censor Breitbart in a horrific way, is that if you tweet the word Breitbart, it's going to be limited, because they do this, and they won't explain it, because they're not transparent, and they're not held to account to the First Amendment. So they can censor for political purposes because they're ostensibly a private company, even though they do the bidding of the Democrat regime that is in power now. All right, a couple of economic items quickly. The Bidenflation has consumer confidence at a 9-month low. Why would you have any confidence with the Omicron variant coming in, with more mandates and lockdowns being discussed, with supply chain issues that are persisting? Why would you feel good? But it is dropping now. And Jerome Powell, who is the Federal Reserve Chair, is been renominated. And this is a chance to see Powell, who is generally makes pretty good presentations when he presents what's going on at the Federal Reserve. He'll probably be even more straightforward about things. And he said he has retired the word transitory from inflation. So get used to it. Inflation is here. It is not going away. And now it is official. So that will, given the supply chain issues, given the Biden inflation, I mean, the economic outlook is just not very good. And still, there is a lot of efforts made to continue to make things more difficult for business owners. Los Angeles, for example, is beginning to enforce vaccine mandates at the gym, restaurants, and businesses. So if you want a chop salad in LA, or if you want a BLT, get ready to get your vax passport out, your government-approved papers. If you want to do a military press or a squat thrust, get those papers going. What country is this? Wokistan. Barack Obama and Anthony Fauci surprised children at a school to support the coronavirus for the kids. So that's coming next. I'm sorry, coronavirus vaccine for the kids. So Dr. Fauci, one of the great monsters of our time, and he continues to get pushed out there. I'll ask Rand Paul about his battle with Dr. Fauci later. It's interesting. We're talking about that story with Xi Jinping and New York Times ignoring China's abuse of the Uyghur Muslims and further human rights abuses. What's China doing there? What is New York Times reporting on during this time? They had a story this week on how climate change is driving albatrosses to divorce. Seems pretty good. What are our major cities doing that are falling apart, that are seeing massive crime waves? Like Illinois, Cook County, seeing 1,000 annual homicides, first time in 27 years. What are major cities doing? You've got Cook County has Chicago in it, if I'm not mistaken. New York is starting a first consumption site for illegal drugs. Maybe it'll work. I don't know. Maybe a nice safe space to do your illegal drugs. Maybe that'll make New York a much better place. Maybe it'll work. Maybe we get the drugs off the street. Outside the box thinking. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's noticed everything is getting more expensive. Did you catch that the Fed has now acknowledged that inflation is not transitory, which means it is here to stay? This is the biggest economic crisis since 2008, and the government's printing trillions and trillions of dollars, and consumer prices are the highest we've seen in 30 years, and consumer sentiment is dipping as well. If the government continues its out-of-control printing and spending, and it will, the dollar could continue its free fall and lose its coveted role as the world's reserve currency. So how do you protect your money, your retirement, your savings? Well, American Hartford Gold can show you how to hedge your hard-earned savings against inflation by helping you diversify a portion of your portfolio into physical gold and silver. They'll even help move your existing IRA or 401k out of the volatile stock market and into a precious metals IRA. And they make it easy. They're the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. And if you call them right now, they'll give you up to $1,500 of free silver on your first qualifying order. So don't wait. Call them now. Call 866-670-7660. That's 866-670-7660 or text Alex to 65532. Again, that's 866-670-7660 or text Alex to 65532. Our first guest for today is Senator Rand Paul, and Senator Paul has been one of the true leaders in the Senate on a number of issues, but the fact that he's a medical doctor makes him uniquely qualified to take on Dr. Fauci, who is a doctor, but is also someone who is, more importantly, a bureaucrat and a Washington swamp creature. And I think that has been revealed throughout the course of this pandemic. And we at Breitbart, we were pretty skeptical of Fauci from day one, but he, I think, has become somewhat of a clownish figure representing an authoritarian and totalitarian left in the United States, but he's treated as a saint in certain corners of the country. Well, I think Dr. Paul's got his number, and we break down exactly what Fauci is getting wrong, and I think you'll get some insight into how Dr. Paul's been so effective at taking on Fauci, but let's hear it. Senator, great to have you on the broadcast, and I have watched Dr. Fauci I think have his credibility not be on solid ground from, I think, the very beginning of the pandemic. You are, I think, the first person to on the public square to really acknowledge this. And you have systematically taken apart so many of his arguments. And a credit to you for doing that. Why is there so few people in public life who are willing to do what you're doing, which is try to use logical arguments to try to dismantle what he's doing? I'm so curious why he is still given the platforms he's given and treated as though, not just as though he speaks for all of science, but he's some sort of a saint as well.
You know, I think he hides behind sort of this imprimatur of that he is science and he doesn't want any criticism. But some people are afraid because they're afraid to wade into the scientific discussion. I think that most of the times he's actually not evaluated the science correctly, and most of the time he's giving edicts that really reflect his own sort of authoritarian impulses. I mean, his desire, and this is true of a lot of people in public health. The people who gravitate to public health are people or doctors who are content to work for government. They've never really been in business. And their first impulse is to try to stop a disease by controlling the people. But it really even goes against the science. Most of the things that man does really have no effect on the virus. So I think most of the mitigation, whether it was masks, social distancing, closing restaurants down, I don't think they affected the virus at all. Now, I do think vaccines do, and I think natural immunity does. But I think most of the other things damaged the economy but did nothing to slow down the virus. And you can prove this. I mean, you can look at the edicts by state. You can look at the edicts by country. And you really show no evidence that the edicts actually worked. Florida is a great example where half of the counties kept the mask mandate for school and the other half didn't. So you have large numbers. And it turns out the incidence of the disease in the kids was about the same. You look at Sweden, they don't wear masks at all in school, and they have had no deaths from COVID, and their teachers have no higher incidence of the disease than any other profession. There's a lot of proof out there that what he tells us is based on his opinion, but we have to push back because really it's the American way to have disputation, you know, to argue both sides of an issue, and then the public, each individual in the public, will try to figure out what the truth is by hearing both sides.
And one thing that he did when he said that he speaks for all of science and attacks on him are an attack on science, it is directly contrary to the scientific method, which is all about questioning and testing hypotheses and continuing to update your conclusions based on emerging facts. He ignores that completely. And not to mention, Senator, you're his kind of main foe on the world stage, and you're a scientist yourself. You're a medical doctor. So he just is clearly living in a world that is totally removed from reality at this point.
Well, even Einstein admitted that he was always one experiment away from being disproven. It's based on facts and experimentation. The thing is that the difference between someone like Dr. Fauci and myself is that I can tell you my opinion, I can support it with facts, but I would never presume that my opinion would become an edict or a law or a mandate for all of the country. He believes that his opinion should be somehow made law and enforced on all of us, whether we should be allowed to travel, whether we should have a vaccine passport. And the thing is, he's completely ignored over 100 million people in our country who have already had COVID. He was asked on CNN, and the disingenuousness of his response is obvious. He was asked about natural immunity, you know, the immunity you get when you've had COVID. And he said, wow, natural immunity, that's interesting. We should look into that, as if he had never thought of it. It's affected probably between 100 and 150 million Americans, and there are some real health concerns. For example, in children, if your child has already had COVID, there is a possibility that the vaccine is more dangerous. We haven't really studied this because all of the studies of the safety on children, all the studies on children have excluded children that had COVID. Why did they exclude the kids that had COVID from the studies? Because they already had an immunity and they wouldn't be able to prove anything. Their study wouldn't be valid as to whether the vaccine works in children. So they excluded them. But that also means they excluded them from the safety trials of the vaccine. There are some reports that when you get vaccinated, if you've already had the disease, that you get a heightened response. Some have said 1,000 times greater response. And you might say, well, that's good. I'll have super immunity. But it also might be that this heightened response is related to myocarditis or inflammation of the heart. And I don't think they've fully studied it. And because it is rare, the myocarditis is rare, you'd have to study it and look at large numbers of people, and you'd have to know what their immune status is. They haven't bothered to do any antibody tests of the kids, so they have no idea whether the people they're vaccinating have already had COVID or not.
And this is one thing that is a stone cold tell that we're being misled, is that there is no consideration for any of these mandates that are being put out for people who've already had the virus and might have stronger natural immunity than the people who are vaccinated. And the fact that, there are no exceptions that are being made for people who have, you could have recently had the virus, but if you haven't had the vaccine, you're still not allowed to get a sandwich in Los Angeles as of today. What's your reaction to that?
See, I think it's actually a malpractice not to consider natural immunity. So, for example, if you're a pediatrician and you're telling every kid to be vaccinated without any consideration for whether or not they've already had COVID, I think you're really practicing bad medicine. I would suggest that everybody who thinks about getting a vaccine for their child ask first for an antibody test. And if your child has already had it, I would think long and hard about having my child vaccinated if they've already had it. And this could be as much as a third of our children already. And so it also would be good knowledge to know. Wouldn't you want to know in school, what if a third of the kids have already had it? Why would you quarantine them? You know, every time someone gets sick now in school, these schools are going crazy, sending the whole class home, thinking they're doing something great. Well, in Sweden, they have 1.8 million children. They don't do any of that. And yet we're doing it here and sending everybody home. But at least a third of those kids may well have already had COVID. And I know for a fact, people come up to me and say, oh, yeah, they sent my kid home, even though my kid had COVID last month. They came in encounter with somebody who has COVID, so they're sending him home. So half these kids are still being sent home for, you know, unscientific reasons.
We have an exclusive photo at the as lead story to Breitbart.com as we're having this conversation of Nancy Pelosi maskless at a crowded event in D.C. And she's talking to a child who's wearing a mask. This is the, I think, third time this week, or if not fourth, where a major Democrat mask pusher has been caught out in public without a mask. We know that the hypocrisy is not a major concern for major Democrats right now, but this is getting really over the top, particularly when you're talking to a masked child.
You know, I think for the people, hypocrisy makes a difference. I think that it has damaged the credibility of, you know, Newsom in California, of Nancy Pelosi here, and Biden when they don't obey their own rules. So I think it is having some effect. But I would say also that it's important that we still have an open and robust debate on this. You know, the cloth masks don't work. The aperture or the opening in the cloth mask is actually a thousandfold bigger than the virus. So the virus goes right through a cloth mask. And this is where I have the real dispute with Fauci. I think he could be costing lives. If you're 75 years old and your spouse has COVID and you're going to take care of them, but you have some health issues and you don't want to get the COVID from your spouse, but you want to take care of your spouse, if you wear a cloth mask, you're risking, you know, your life. If you wear the N95 mask, it might be 90 times greater chance that you might be protected. And so what they're doing is really giving you advice that could risk your life. Also, by ignoring natural immunity and saying everybody should be vaccinated equally, countries like India that have a billion people but have a couple hundred million vaccines, and they if they choose not to prioritize those who haven't been infected, guess what? They'll spend a lot of time vaccinating 30, 40, 50, 60-year-olds who have already had it. Meanwhile, people 70, 80, 90 who haven't had it would be farther back in the line. So none of this makes sense, and none of this makes sense with how you would target a vaccine towards the most vulnerable. And really, I seriously believe that Fauci's prognostications have cost thousands of lives around the world. And this isn't even getting to the point of whether or not he funded the origin of the virus in a Chinese lab.
Yeah, and terrific point about the cloth mask not working, but it's a point that we should have understood well over a year ago. I think you did. I think Florida understood it, but certain places didn't. I want to turn back to Fauci and also the man we refer to as the friendly fascist, Dr. Francis Collins. These are the two least credible spokespeople for much of America that hasn't yet been vaccinated. And I'm pretty much in the same camp as you, Senator, on the vaccines, it appears. And the people who are selling the vaccines to the unvaccinated now have almost no credibility with a lot of the unvaccinated people. Why are these the spokespeople for the vaccines? Why isn't it you? Why isn't it Dr. Greg Murphy, a congressman, a Republican? Why isn't it people like that who might get through to some of the unvaccinated people? They keep putting out guys like Fauci, who we tuned out over a year ago.
Yeah, and see, the thing is the vaccine hesitancy, I think, is mostly responsible or mostly a response to misinformation that you have gotten from Fauci and others. And you're right. If you were leading a vaccine effort and you really wanted people to be vaccinated, the people who are unvaccinated would be much more likely to listen to me than they would be to Fauci. And yet no one's ever asked me, will you do a public service announcement? Now, every time I'm on the air, I do say that if you're vulnerable, I would be vaccinated. particularly over 65 and overweight. I think people at almost any age, probably after age 30 in particular, overweight, significantly overweight, are at risk for this disease. The vaccine is not perfect, but I think it does reduce your risk of being in the hospital or dying. I also mentioned in every speech I give that monoclonal antibodies will save your life, but you have to get them before you get too sick or Dr. Fauci will deny you care. Because the government directs all things COVID, if you get admitted to the hospital, they won't give you any of the monoclonal antibodies. So you have to be very, very, you know, aware of what the different rules are if you get COVID or your parents or grandparents get it, because you have to wait, you know, wind your way through the government labyrinth of rules. But yeah, I think hesitancy is coming from the misinformation of the big government types. And actually, they'd be better off actually saying that voices like ours from the right would actually be voices that might encourage some people to get vaccinated.
Senator Rand Paul, also a medical doctor, Republican from Kentucky. I know we could go on all day, but I want to respect your time, so I'm going to let you run. And I thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. Be right back. Yeah, really good stuff. Painful to end that interview. I wanted to keep going and talk about China's role in the coronavirus, whether or not we should boycott the Olympics, whether or not he has any sense that Omicron will be under control by the time we go to the Olympics, whether or not China's even kicked Delta, all that stuff was something that I would like to get to with Senator Paul. So hopefully he'll be back soon. Today, though, in lieu of a caller of the day, because we had a long slate of guests, we had four guests, which is more than usual, and they're very, very strong guests as well. We're going to do a second interview. This time is with my friend Sean Spicer, former White House press secretary. One of the good guys in Washington. You know, I rarely say that, but he is just a good all around guy. Funny, too. He's got a book out, too, that we get into, a fair bud Newsmax host, and always has an interesting take on what's going on. So let's hear from the former White House press secretary. Sean, great to have you back on the broadcast. Let's get right into it. And I want to get your take on, let's start with Chris Cuomo, a.k.a. Fredo. I mean, it's such a delight for conservative media to watch such a bad guy go down. But, I mean, did it really take this much, Sean, for him to finally get the axe?
Well, apparently. I think, though, the funny thing about this, Alex, is that in some ways, as I watch this unfold, I'm wondering if we're focusing on the wrong stuff. Meaning, and it's like what he did more than anything is lie to us, to his viewers. I think CNN did the same, saying that there was nothing to see here, saying he wasn't advising. That's clearly a lie. I mean, I got to be honest with you. If something happened to me, you know, I might reach out to a family member and say, hey, I'm in a bind. I need some help. You've got an expertise. You're a lawyer. You're a media guy. You're whatever, a doctor. But you reach out to your friends and family first. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. What I have is a problem with the fact that they lied about it, that he went on air and said it wasn't like I was an advisor to my brother. And he was. The text messages show. It's like he then lied and said, well, I'm not covering him. We know that was a lie. CNN said that they were satisfied with his answers. This is supposed to be an organization that prides itself on its investigative news reporting and couldn't either find the facts or didn't want to. But I think the big problem that I have with all of this is the sanctimonious attitude of CNN, where they're better than everybody. They admonish everybody for lying and not being straight, and yet this comes out. So I just want to make sure that we, when we go after this and we cover this, that we're coming at it from the right angle, because I think a lot of folks, you know, are going after him for advising his brother. And I mean, that's fair, I guess. But my point is think, if we think about it in our own lives, we'd say, okay, well, if my brother or sister or family member called me, you know, I might say to them, hey, I'll give you my 2 cents. What I really care is the problem here. It's both CNN and Chris Cuomo misleading us. And that's where I actually think that we need to focus our ire, because they walk around talking about how everyone in the Trump administration is a liar. And here they are over and over again lying to us.
Yeah, that's right. And then these are the exact people who policed, you know, minor things that President Trump might have gotten incorrect, or maybe even not incorrect sometimes, stuff that was correct. And we were obsessively told what liars you guys all were in the Trump administration. And then they're doing this stuff. It's every single day, Sean. I'm reporting two or three issues like this. But here's one thing that I'm curious about. I'm wondering, clearly the CNN thinks that Fredo has worn out his usefulness to them, or else they would have figured out a way to keep this going. But something else crossed my mind. I guess there's a possibility there's more to the story because he was using CNN resources to investigate his brother's accusers. Maybe more people at CNN knew what was going on. Maybe more. This is a bigger conspiracy.
Yeah, that's why when I said to you a moment ago, you know, you got to tell me that, like, when CNN claimed that they were looking into this, I mean, it didn't take much to look into it, right? In terms of looking at exactly what you're saying, the resources of CNN, were they used? Did he use their email? Did he use, you know, a CNN issued phone or anything like that? I just have a hard time believing that this happened. The other thing that I think is interesting from just a constitutional standpoint, as much as we all are cheering this, here's the thing that, again, worries me a little, that you have this Attorney General, Letitia James, who's just clearly got a vendetta against the Cuomos. I share the mission, if you will, maybe. But I wonder, you know, what we're overlooking is she went and dumped a bunch of text messages. And the question I have is, you know, did we win the wrong way? And I'm still grappling with that. And because I'm not a lawyer. And so I don't fully appreciate what she did was legal. But I mean, I just wonder if I got wrapped up in some scandal regarding somebody else and all of a sudden my text messages were dumped. Would that be an issue? And so, again, I'm not a lawyer, and I was just thinking about this. Obviously, this all happened last night. It was literally during our show on Newsmax when it occurred last night, and we were talking about it right then. But from a legal standpoint, Alex, I'm actually intrigued whether or not what the Attorney General in New York did may have benefited folks on the right by exposing Cuomo for the fraud that he is. But did we sort of win the wrong way? And I don't know. I can't answer that yet.
Yeah, very interesting point. Sean, you have to look on at the Biden administration that just can't get anything right, aside from those 13 Republicans kind of bailing out Biden on the infrastructure bill on the House side. Almost nothing's gone right. Even those of us who thought Joe Biden was kind of a clown and a dummy couldn't have predicted he'd have this many problems in his first, you know, 9-10 months of his administration. As someone who was at the podium in the press briefing room during a tumultuous time in American public life, even you have to look on and think, oh my goodness, this is a true dumpster fire. But I want some nuance, some detail. What are you thinking when you observe this current administration in contrast to the last one?
Well, the funny thing is the last administration, the Trump administration, and you're right, I was there for the first part of it. We were about chalking up wins, like substantive wins, tax policy, trying to get healthcare done. We didn't get it done, but we tried. You know, infrastructure, making all those foreign policy deals, redoing USMCA, which was NAFTA, and making a better deal for American workers. So it was actually about getting things done. This administration, here we are 10 months in, and we're struggling to see, you know, it's low approval ratings. The economy's a disaster. COVID continues to go nuts. I mean, if you think about it, Dan Balz from The Washington Post had a piece over the weekend that talked about the three things that Biden really promised, right? One was containing COVID. Two was getting the economy jump-started again. And three was unity. I don't see how in any objective way that anybody, even in the Biden administration, can claim that they've done any of the three. I mean, so it's amazing to me when you actually measure a yardstick, you know, success. They can't do it. I got a book out called Radical Nation now, and I talk about the fact that, like, these guys measure success by appointments. So it's, we appointed the first black woman to be, or, you know, named to be vice president. We named and appointed the first LGBTQ person to run a department. It's all about the first transgender person to be, you know, have a 4-star equivalent. It's all about, to them, box checking and not about accomplishment. And I think we have to understand from the right that they're trying to change the entire metric of how to be judged, because to them, it's using this left-wing stick of, it's not what you get done. It's not about your accomplishments. It's about how many things that you can say you did first on the woke scale. But the other thing to your question is, you know, how do we judge them? Think about this. I was watching Jen Psaki the other day lie. I mean, she lied about the fact that either she hadn't seen a viral video of the president not wearing a mask at a store, or she's incompetent. But it's one of the two. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I'm the press secretary for the president, and I haven't seen a viral video that everyone is talking about, and he always wears a mask. We know that's not true. From the first day of his inauguration at the Lincoln Memorial, we know that that was not a lie. But yet they get away with it over and over again because they have a complicit press corps, Alex. And that's the thing, is that these guys, over and over again, we hear about the travel ban. President Biden, then candidate Biden, was clear that he thought what Trump was doing in terms of banning was wrong, right? He said bans are wrong and they don't work. She gets asked about him in the briefing room, and she says, no, it's in response to a tweet that former President Trump sent out. That's just simply not true. Those are lies. And yet they won't call them out because you have a press corps that agrees with it.
Sean Spicer, again, is my guest. Radical Nation is the book, and Spicer and Company every evening on Newsmax is worth your time. Enjoyable show, Sean. I always get good feedback on your show, not just when I'm on it, which is from time to time, but everyone likes your show. So congrats on that.
Well, thank you. That's also because I text you and I say, great job, Alex. And so it's like a self-looking. We sort of applaud each other. And
the ice cream cone, though, does mine have Jimmy's on it? Because just in case Biden shows up, he likes his Jimmy's on his ice cream cone. He likes chocolate chips, too. The guy really enjoys the chocolate chips.
I appreciate the fact that you say Jimmy's, because that makes me feel warm inside.
Well, but sometimes they call it sprinkles, but it's the same thing. And not everyone knows that.
First of all, you know that in New England, you don't call them sprinkles, especially in Rhode Island. You call them Jimmy's.
Not everyone knows it. I mean, everyone should know it, but this is where you come in.
That's true. Good point.
So one thing that's going to happen that's going to be major is, despite the fact that Joe Biden has promised on 10 occasions at least that he will vanquish the coronavirus, we are now set to see Joe Biden's death toll for the virus surpass that of Donald Trump's. And Biden's had vaccines the whole time, and yet we're still seeing the same people getting pressed out there by the commentary class and by the Democrats, i.e. Fauci and the friendly fascist Francis Collins, et cetera, to sell the vaccines to the people. This is a international disgrace, in my opinion, and there's not just no accountability. I mean, Fauci would get canonized if there was any formal church on the media Democrat side of the aisle right now. Is this something that you're thinking about as someone who was a part of the prior administration? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I think is so funny is I was watching some clips on Instagram of different news organizations, because that's the way I get my news. And these guys are like, I can't believe the right is attacking Fauci. And I'm like, think about this. If Alex Marlow opens up the next segment by saying, if you question anything I say today, you're questioning radio, because I am radio. If you questioned anything I said tonight and said I am broadcast or cable television, people would be mocking you to the end of the earth and like laughing. And Mediaite and all these crazy things would be talking about Breitbart and Alex Marlow's nuts, and Spicer said this tonight. But because it's Fauci, they're like, you know, he's got a point. He is science. I just, on its face, a human being saying, any human being saying, I am science, would literally cause a mixture between laughter and a questioning of their sanity. And yet, because it's Fauci, everyone's going, you know what, he's got a point, he is science. I mean, I just tells you how much the left has lost it when somebody can proclaim that an attack on them is an attack on science because they represent science. Are you kidding me? If anyone else said that, the media would be all over them saying, how dare they say that? I cannot believe that any person would say something like that and not think that they'd be getting mocked. And yet here we are. And everyone's like, you know, Fauci's got a point. He is science.
It is unbelievable, especially when you know the whole point of the scientific method is you're supposed to keep questioning your hypothesis and keep testing it, not announcing it's a done deal. Whatever I say is gospel.
And also, if you're a doctor, right, what's the first, you know, the advice I always give you if you get a diagnosis, please get a second opinion, right? And sure. And we know that in many cases, that's a very smart thing to do, just to either reaffirm and give the patient the sense that the decision was made was correct, or frankly, just to ensure that doctor didn't miss something. And yet here he is saying, if you question me, if you question the almighty Fauci, then you are a heretic. You have a problem.
It also reminds you of how much, how little pushback goes against Fauci and how little time he is spent actually having to defend his viewpoints, because my wife's a physician, and I know that it seems like almost every one of her patients that she tells me about, it almost always has questions and pushbacks about recommended treatment, even if it's sort of a slam dunk, obvious cookie cutter approach. It just, that's how most of us are wired. And then this guy comes out here and just says that, hey, I am science. It is clear that he's not really practicing medicine. He's practicing going on a Fredo show and yucking it up on cable news.
Yeah. It's, again, you asked me about the previous administration a minute ago, and I think to myself, how many times we have criticized you? You know, they're only doing interviews. Look at Fauci's media diet. All he does is go on Rachel Maddow, MSNBC, left-wing blogs. You know, it's like, what's he afraid of? Is he afraid of having somebody question him? Because I've treated every guest that we've ever had with respect. So, I mean, I've asked him multiple times to come on. No response. But why? What is he afraid of? Is he afraid of somebody sort of saying, hey, I think I got a D or something in science, so it's not like I'm some genius. So all he'd have to do is run, you know, academic circles around me, but he can't handle the question.
Sean Spicer, again, everyone should pick up Radical Nation, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's Dangerous Plan for America book out now. Spicer and Company. Also, every evening on Newsmax. So, Sean, you're in the heartbeat of MAGA world in Washington. I mean, the vibe's got to be pretty good right now. But what are people looking at? Because it's still a long way to go until people can get to the polls. What's your recommendation for people right now who are really fired up and are just, they're chomping at the bit to vote, but we can't for a year. So, what do you recommend for people?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is to stay vigilant in the sense that this. The Democrats, when they had this horrible night in Virginia, New Jersey, and elsewhere, need to understand that the Democrats got the message. The message is your time is up, and the elections in November are the end of your reign. So my point is that Republicans have to understand that if you don't stay active and engaged the way that those parents and others have done in like counties like Loudoun County, Virginia, and elsewhere throughout the country, that these guys understand what they're about to do, which is to pass as much as they can in as short a time before we get to the midterms when they lose the majority. So don't think somehow because they got a shellacking that they're going to stop. They're just going to keep going. I mean, they get it.
Yeah, they're playing for keeps, and so many of us are not. And I think that's a good message that I think you gotta walk the walk in this regard. Sean, I really appreciate it. Wish we had more time, my friend. We'll talk to you next time.
You bet. Thank
you. All right, that'll do it for today. Thanks so much to Paul D'Amelio and Greg Eben, our excellent producers. Robert Marlowe helps me pick stories. And I thank all of you for telling 10,000 friends and family members about this show, the new podcast, and telling them that they don't need a SiriusXM subscription. They can get the whole thing wherever they get their podcasts. But if they are so inclined to listen to the full 3-hour show, by all means, get that subscription. It's on the SXM app and live every morning at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. As always, Breitbart.com is available for you 24/7 for all the latest in news, all the news you need, really. It is a one-stop shop, and sharing our content on the social web does a lot of good as well. So thanks again, and we'll talk to you tomorrow for another edition of Breitbart News Daily.